This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 96 of the DTV Digest. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me, as usual, is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
As usual, we're bringing you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema, instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. This week, we have an interesting film called Sword of God, also known as The Mute, to look at. Our short shot is a film called The Gunslinger, and we're going to round off with our DTV throwback, Kill Ratio. So, our first review is Sword of God. Set in the Middle Ages, two Christian knights find themselves on a foreign shore, peopled by a primitive, near-Neanderthal-like tribe. Knowing that their king will arrive in a few months, they take it upon themselves to convert the locals to save them. However, while Will Broad, the elder of the pair, decide to use might and force to turn the natives and coerce them into building a church, the younger tries a different method, embedding himself in the village and learning their ways and language. Okay, so when I saw the trailer for this, I was really impressed with the visual style. It's a Polish movie, I think it's sort of some Belgian involvement.
I think there's
well.
Some Belgian involvement, but it's primarily a Polish film, I believe.
Polish. This is the most visually striking film I've seen in a long, long time. It is a very slow-paced film. It's not going to be for everyone, that is for sure. It's certainly not the sort of film that the DVD cover is trying to sell it as. Although it's not far from, you know, it's not sort of like throwing helicopters and zombies at it, everyone, or anything like that. But this is a very sort of slow, measured pace, a look at you know, people's faith and how it can be brutalized, and you know, the sort of hypocrisy of the church. Rich, how did you feel about this?
Well, it starts out with a very arty point of view with whispered dialogue, and it goes on for a while, and I was thinking, oh no. And my mood or my, you know, connection with the film didn't really improve from there. I do like my films a bit more fast paced, and yeah, this was just too arty for me. Although as you've said, it is visually arresting. It's very dark, hypnotic cinematography. You cannot deny that. It's interesting. I didn't connect with the way it was, what it was doing, but I thought it was very interesting, in what it was trying to do, even though I didn't connect with it, if you see what I'm saying.
The
themes are interesting. I found it a bit hard to follow. I wasn't really clear. I hadn't read the synopsis or anything, so I sort of went in and I'm trying to establish what I think. And the tribe, it reminds me of like something like one of, I don't know if it was Jean-Jacques Arnaud did the film about the cavemen and stuff. You know, they've got these, you know, it's basically a silent film, but it's, you know, because there's no dialogue.
Bought that film at Christmas time. My birthday when we went up in London.
You know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and the tribe, I mean, the makeup and everything is fantastic, and the language, because I'm not sure if it's completely made up or whatever, but it's all very engaging and authentic, and the characters are all, they're all dark, you know, there's no good in this film, really. It's all dark, which is wonderful. I guess the film looks so dark, and the sort of building of the church, and it's just very bleak, and I don't know much about the Polish knights, you know, or sort of it almost seems like their version of the Knights Templar or the Teutonic Knights, you know, going out preaching and killing people in the way. Yeah,
as
it's all sort of crusade.
Yeah,
it's very, you know, very unappealing presentation, but you know, all, you know, you can certainly believe it. You know, that we know that this is the kind of thing that was happening, even though this is a fantasy kind of story. I was interested whether it was thematically similar at all to a film you watched a while back from Russia called The Viking. Because I remember you saying that was touched on some sort of similar ground.
That was about sort of conversion to Christianity and all that, but on a sort of different scale. But yeah, I mean, funny enough, there was two other films that came to mind watching this, which were both about sort of missionaries. One was a film called Black Robe, which I think was back in the 90s, about two priests who go to like North America and end up getting involved with sort of, you know, the Indian tribes, sort of Native American tribes. Mm-hmm. That was quite harrowing. And there was, the Martin Scorsese one, The Silence.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing is, I was thinking, I wonder if this is like The Silence, because I've never seen Silence, but it kind of made me think, I bet this is a similar treatment of a similar topic.
So, exactly. It's that sort of thing that, you know, it's those sort of films, you know, that sort of audience is going to appeal to, mainly. You know, I was really taken with the visual, the cinematography and the quality of the imagery. I thought was absolutely superb.
I think that's what kept me going, really, more than anything else.
It is. I agree with you. It's a film, for the most part, it's easy to
a very to look slow at. Burn. Very slow burn.
It's nice to look at, difficult to watch, if you see what I mean. You know.
Yeah.
You know, things come to a head between the sort of the two main characters. As I said, one of them, he goes into the village, basically he sews his own mouth shut, which is why it's called The Mute. It's sort of originally called The Mute.
I can just step in there, the original title is Krev Boga, which translates as God's blood. And then they basically, in various territories, the title has been changed to either Sword of God or The Mute. So it's not just known as Sword of God in the UK. The Mute is one of the more popular titles, which I think is kind of misleading, because although the Mute character is a focus, he's not by any means sort of the main character, and there's a lot of times when he's actually not in the film. So
yeah, Real Broad is sort of the more sort of prominent of the pair.
Yeah.
He's kind of like the antagonist, really.
Yeah,
there's a classic bit early on where after they meet the natives and they sort of survive the initial sort of encounter with them, he singles out the village shaman who wears like a clay mask, you know, and he's sort of saying, "Oh, you know, this his mask is just clay, he's just human," and he challenges him to this thing called a trial of fire, whereby he walks through this fire from one side to the other and comes out unscathed. But of course he's unscathed. He's wearing like cured leather sort of armor and chainmail. You know, not the sort of thing that's easily flammable. Whereas this other poor guy is in like furs, and he goes up in flames in a shop, basically. And the other, you know, and he's got the temerity to sort of go, No, there's no magic involved. No. It's like, you bastard, you knew what was going to happen.
It is interesting how the tribe gets divided. I think, you know, there's the one who becomes mute, he has his mouth shown shut. I was just spending a lot of my time thinking, his mouth is still shown shut, right? I mean, he must be, how is he eating or whatever? But, eventually that sort of does change. But he, you know, develops a romance, which is like based on, you know, just body language and looks and stuff. It's not, you know, they can't communicate in the same language, which I thought was really nice. There's some really touching scenes with them. The sort of rallying, you know, he gets the ones that the main character, who you're much better with the names of the characters.
Broad. Well, they only give the name of one of them, which is the sort of the older one, which is Will Broad.
Yeah, so the elder, he's you know, converting, getting to build the church. He's handing them swords, which I was thinking, where did the swords come from? But I think
them from the boat earlier. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they've been sent as basically emissaries, haven't they, to this land, which is I guess like a Slavic land or something, which is kind of undefined. But it's definitely an interesting film, but if a complex and challenging one.
It is, definitely. And it's not the sort of thing that's going to go down very well on DVD. You know, the masses aren't going to really get to grips with it, I don't think. This is better off finding an audience on Netflix or something like that, I think.
I think this is kind of film that I would expect to see turn up on like Now TV. Oh, not Now TV, Sky Cinema and Now TV, obviously.
Or Channel 4 even, or even BBC 2 sort of thing, you know.
Yeah, BBC 4 or something. Yeah, it's a high... It's more of an art film. It's more of a Curzon kind of release, of film. So I'm surprised it hasn't... I mean, especially with that striking cinematography, I'm surprised that someone like Curzon Artificial Eye didn't pick this up, and a very small outfit like Lightbulb have. It's interesting. Now, as a final thought, I just wanted to mention this has come out the same week as two other films in which the cover art is a man with a sword.
All right. One Romulus versus Remus.
Yeah, Romulus versus Remus, the First King, which is also it's an Italian film, also called Il Primo Re.
Yes, or during the sort of early Roman times, that one.
And at the other end of the spectrum is the American film Scorpion King: Book of Souls, which made its premiere on Sky last year, and came out and now has come out on DVD. Yeah. It's just funny the whole. We know these sort of period kind of movies are popular in the DTV landscape, but it's unusual to see three with the same kind of theme come out in the same week.
I really like the Book of Souls, the Scorpion King one. It's that guy again, and it's Shane. I can never remember his bloody name.
Victor Webster.
No, the main guy, the one who was also in Death Race. Or whatever it was.
Oh, sorry. No, not Victor Webster. It's Victor Webster was in the previous one, wasn't he? This is Zach McGowan.
Zach McGowan, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Shane McGowan, bloody Pogues again.
Sorry, Victor Webster was in the third and fourth films.
Right. Yeah.
So this is the third actor to play the... No, the fourth actor to play the Scorpion.
Yeah, you got The Rock and
there was that young guy who played him in the second one, because that was a prequel. Yeah. The timeline is crazy on those films.
So the second one was actually quite interesting. It was directed by Russell Mulcahy. And then Roll Reigns got involved. And who did the latest one?
Claudio Farr, I think.
Yeah.
Faye.
Yeah.
This one's Don Michael Paul.
Yeah.
It's
very good. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's a good slice of fun, that one.
Anyway, gone off on a tangent.
Yeah, a little bit, yeah.
Scores on the doors for Sword of God.
Okay, this is an art house release, really, been sold through Asda and all the rest of it as if it's a sort of more sort of like sword, blood and guts kind of thing. It's a very slow pace, but I did enjoy it overall. I'm going to give it a 7.
For the cinematography, I'm giving it a 6.
Not to everyone's taste, but if you like the films like, you know, as I mentioned, The Silence and The Black Robe, that sort of thing, definitely check it out. If you don't like that sort of thing, I suggest the Tom Holland film, which is called The Pilgrimage, I believe. I'm just going to quickly check that.
Oh, yeah, that came out a couple of years ago, didn't it?
Yeah.
I distinctly remember it because that's one film that came out that I completely overlooked, even though I tried to keep on top of every single release.
John Bernthal's in that one as well.
Bernthal. The Punisher.
Yep, Punisher himself. Pilgrimage, yes. Yes, that was a really interesting film. So, if you don't like this sort of thing, check out The Pilgrimage, much more sort of DTV fair. I'm going to shut up now. Our short shot this week is The Gunslinger, not to be confused with The Gunfighter, another very good short film. In this one, we have a young woman, unnamed, who heads off to an unnamed city, unnamed town, to do a duel with some guy who doesn't even know who she is. And seems to be sort of spurned on by the narrator all the way through. This is an interesting one. There's no credits or anything on this on IMDb, Rich.
No. Well, it's very new. It's only just come out, basically. It came out 6 weeks ago or something.
Mm-hmm. Very well shot. And you know, the action bit that we get is really well done. This, you know, this girl definitely knows how to handle a gun, that's for sure. I just really liked it. It's very breezy, you know, 2-3 minute long short.
It's about 5 minutes.
Is it that long?
I think it might be three. I'll be honest, I'm not sure. I think it's 3 to 5 minutes long.
Yeah, it's not long, but it's very.
I think striking. You're probably right. It's quite brief. It gets to the point quite quickly.
Yeah, it seems to be produced by a gun company or a gun lobby. Some sort of interested party to do with guns.
Well, that's the thing is, this is a film that's been made to promote a firearm. So this is made by the Car Firearms Group, and it's one of those short films that's an advert. So a bit like the Ridley Scott and the hotel, the International Airport kind of thing that he did. This is I've never seen anything like this before because, you know, living in the UK, we don't have a firearms industry that's promoted to the regular public. So this is a very American kind of film, and it's made by this Car Firearms Group. So the story is at the service of the firearm, which I haven't noted down what it's called, but it's a very big, like six shooter. Mm. And I looked up a little bit on the girl who's the star, because it's like a teen or young lady who's the lead, called Daniela D'Angelo, who's
a top marksman, basically.
Yes, she's very proficient in the world, in the sport, you know, because shooting is a sport in the United States. As well as sort of being for protection.
Yeah, if you let YouTube play on after this particular film, there's a top 10 sort of best of her clips.
Yeah,
showing you just how proficient she is. She is, you know, in
she's like John Wick.
She is John Wick. You know, when you see how quickly she can sort of fire the gun, her accuracy, how quickly she reloads and everything, you know. Every single weapon you can think of that goes bang, you know, she knows how to use basically accurately. Yeah, she is John Wick personified, basically. And she wants to be a lawyer.
It'd be interesting if they did try and do anything like that, because this is a very modern, you know, it's very typical American, playing into the American, you know, the West, of the myth of the West and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But with a young female protagonist is quite interesting. There's not a lot of things. A problem I had with that was her costume didn't look particularly authentic.
Not at all. No.
No, she looked.
Yeah.
It looked very much, even though it said 1874, it looked like, hang on a minute.
She just looked like you're wearing ball. Yeah.
which kind of lets the film down, because everything else about it is kind of quite spot on. The same, it's shot incredibly well. You know, looks great. The narrator is quite good, because she doesn't speak really. I think she might say something at the end. I can't remember. But the villain of the piece, so the typical man in black, you know, black hatted bad guy. I think he says something. But the most of it is just the story being told by the narrator. It's a nice little film. I say very novel to see a short film promoting a gun. An interesting sort of seeing how the gun is focused on in those shots where they're clearly clearly trying to fetch it. I mean, it looks enormous.
It doesn't look like she
should be able to handle it.
It reminded me of the scene in The Quick and the Dead when they go to give Russell Crowe a gun, and you know, he's sort of spinning it around, he's sort of like rolling the cartridge on his arm and that sort of thing. It's kind of reminded me of that, which is really cool. But yeah, it's a bit disconcerting, actually, because the only thing the other guy says at the end is, "Who are you?" after he's been shot. You know, obviously, clearly this is a girl who likes to shoot first and ask questions later, sort of.
Nod to all the old...
having said that, her sort of screen presence is actually really good. They do a good job of... you know, her movements, the way she looks, you know, her outlook and everything fits with the mood of the film. You know, she's not just like a cardboard cutout stand-in sort of thing. You can't imagine David Beckham in the same place, if you see what I mean. Mm-hmm. You know, she's able to sell the fact that she's a gunslinger, whereas everyone else will go, David Beckham's pretending, you know. But yeah, no, I thought they did a really good job. Quite enjoyed it. Our DTV throwback this week is Kill Ratio. An attack on the new president of a fledgling Eastern European democracy pits an American covert operative against the country's ruthless military leader, determined to seize control of the government. This is all set within a small hotel, sort of on the border of this small Eastern European country. And our hero is Tom Cooper, is it?
His name is James Henderson, and he's played by Tom Hopper.
Tom Hopper, sorry. So James Henderson is working as a fixer for a telecommunications company who are looking to set up in this new country and sort of get the you know, the exclusive rights to giving them their sort of infrastructure. Oh my God, Rich, we're in back in Chinese salesman territory.
Yeah, yeah. Very, very, very similar sort of
very similar
theme going
because,
on there.
Because
yeah.
We have a coup as well as these deals are going through. And so these guys find themselves stuck in this hotel along with other sort of American news crews and another sort of shady operative as well. And basically, it begins with a race to try and get this woman to the airport, but she makes a startling discovery herself and sort of brings the beleaguered president back to the hotel, and they have to sort of try and hide her while sort of evading the sort of various forces within the hotel. Now, this is directed by Paul Tanter.
Yes.
Who directed two of the worst action movies I've ever seen, He Who Dares and Downing Street Siege, both starring Simon Phillips. They are audaciously bad. But then, last Christmas, Christmas 2018, we reviewed a film called Once Upon a Time at Christmas, which was a really, really good horror movie set around the 12 Days of Christmas by Paul Tanter, which also starred Simon Phillips. And I really, really enjoyed it. And this kind of sits in the middle. Clearly, making this film, he's learned a hell of a lot about his job as a director. And I think he does a very efficient job. This is, you know, it is shot on a low budget. That does show at times. But I think he's got a really good lead in Tom Hopper. And I thoroughly enjoyed this. I've seen it twice now, and I actually enjoyed it more the second time, I think.
Mm-hmm. The last week, we looked at Crackerjack. Mm. Which was Die Hard in a Mountain Resort.
Yep.
And this week we've basically got a variation on the same theme. So we've got Die Hard in a hotel.
Yeah.
It's not quite a resort, but it's, you know, pretty close.
It's Die Hard in a Premier Inn, basically, isn't it?
It's not quite got the... I mean, I think Crackerjack had a sort of a bigger scale.
Yeah.
If you know, they could pull back and you had lots of people in the ballroom kind of thing. This is a bit more modest. Yeah, like you say, there is a bit of a Premier Inn kind of feel to it. I get what you're saying there. But what I loved about it was it starts out really epic. It doesn't quite fulfill on that, but it's the opening of this film is what the opening of Crackerjack should have been.
Yeah.
Like really big sort of lovely vistas of the landscapes.
Yeah.
Shots of landscape cinematography, which I'm wondering if they're like stock shots or something compared to the rest of the film, because you don't get anything else like that after the opening credits. But it starts out like on deadly ground, basically. So you got these lovely shots, big epic music. The title comes up really excellent, and so I was really sort of pumped when it starts. When it gets underway, you can see okay, the budget limitations sort of kicking in, and it's a bit more like it reminded me of the New Image film, The Ultimate. I can't remember what the other name for it is, but with Eric Roberts, which was made by Albert Pune, which is another sort of hotel under siege kind of thing. But I've got mixed feelings about this one, because I think there's a lot that's really quite decent in it, but there's some other stuff that really lets it down. One of the problems I've got with it is the abundance of exposition. there's so many conversations about things happening and implications, and you know what's going to happen, and setting the scene and developing this whole coup story, which is, you know, they can only talk about it because they can't really show much of it. There's a couple of minor visual effects that are done, and some news broadcasts and things, but it just keeps going. There's always a big conversation just around the corner, more so than the action. But in the latter part of the film, the action really kicks in, and for the most part, I really enjoyed it. Although there is a really funny aspect to which I believe you mentioned to me previously, which is to do with the gunfights, which I'll let you mention.
Yeah, there are times. It doesn't happen as much as I remember it happening, but there are times when, to sort of cut down on the budget, I guess, you know, when they're firing weapons, they're actually extending their arms so the gun is off screen, and then sort of firing. So you get the sound effect, and you get the kind of effect of them firing a gun, but it is a bit of a cheat. I mean, it, as I said, it happens a few times, but not as often as I remembered it happening when I first saw it.
It's not all the time, but because there's a lot of CGI muzzle flashes and stuff. There's loads of that to complement it. They're clearly going, boop, boop, you know, bang, 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 and they've just put it all the effects in afterwards or whatever. So there's nothing sort of too practical happening in terms of squibs or anything. But there is a lot of gunfire, and I do enjoy that. You get the bad guy who comes. The bad guy's like the leading the coup. He's an ousted general, dictator, and he's coming back, and he wants to take control again. So we've got it's a bit like a concept for like a series of 24, but they've just pushed it into, they've just set it in this one place. Tom Hopper's character, that's mentioning on Deadly Ground, and he's established as a bit of a friend to the bad guys, almost. You know,
he's a bit of a roguish character. And you know, he kind of knows who the bad guys are. And there's a bit where he it's clear he doesn't want to get involved. He just wants to get him and his the woman he's working with out of there. But then he sort of walks past a hotel room where one of the staff is about to get raped, and it's like, damn it, you know, I can't not get involved, sort of thing, you know. There's a brilliant conversation as well that he ends up having with the other American, because at first, the way I saw it was his character was, you know, he's working for this company as a fixer, but you know, he's got a bit of a past, sort of thing. But then he has a conversation with the American, and you find out that he never was working with this particular company. You know, that was all a cover right from the start, which I thought was, you know, it's a nice little twist, and I thought it was very well delivered as well. So yeah, Tom Hopper,
he's ripped in this. He's ripped, isn't he?
Pretty good. Yeah, I didn't really recognise him at the time, but he was in one of my favourite films from a few years ago, Northman of Viking Saga. He's in the TV series Black Sails, Game of Thrones. He's done quite a few different things. The Umbrella Academy on Netflix. One of the main. Oh, he was Luther on the Umbrella character. You know, the one wearing the muscle suit.
I don't know.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
Know.
Oh, right. Okay. You know.
In fact, I haven't seen him in anything prior to this, because I've not watched any of those other projects. so this was my first experience of him. He's playing American, but he's from Leicestershire.
Yeah.
I thought he did really well. He's really tall.
Yes.
And
when you see him at the end, sort of stood next to his co co-stars.
Yeah.
In the final shot, he's about a foot and a half taller than the girl.
he's really worked out. He's like, there's lots of shots of his abs in the movie. it's a great role for him. He gets to do Die Hard, you know, and
yeah, absolutely,
it's quite fun. he basically abandons a prostitute, and she gets killed, so that his conscience is kind of pricked by the discovery of her body when that one, because she kind of gets killed as in a scene where the bad guy gets to prove how much of an evil bastard he is.
That's right. How bad is he, sort of thing.
Yeah, but then we also get in typical Seagal fashion, where they reveal, they do the "how badass is he" speech about this guy, and the lead henchman bloke says that he's just one man.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, what possibly could go wrong? There's one scene where, going back to the gunplay, there's one bit where he's trying to shoot through a pillow to use it as a silencer, he takes ages.
Yeah,
he's always shooting the woman he's trying to save, which I quite like.
Yeah, because he's in the middle of a fight himself, isn't he? So him and this other guy are wrestling over the gun, and at the same time he's trying to put a pillow over it so he can, you know, sort of silence the shot. It's just very, very good. Quite inventive little scene. The president is having a hide in the bathtub, and the guy goes to take a leak, and I think, is he going to spot her? Is he not going to spot her? That was really cool.
That's quite a comment. I liked it when the bad guy he was fighting jumps down the laundry chute.
Oh yeah.
And then he jumps down the laundry chute as well, and the guy lands on the bottom, and is it James? He comes down with his fist out and just punches the guy out at the bottom of the bottom of the chute. I thought that was great.
So, as we mentioned, this is directed by Paul Tanter, who he really didn't have the best of starts.
I've enjoyed all of the movies I've seen that he's done. But even though they've been, you know, they have been flawed and low budget and whatever, and that he's one of the directors I've been very interested to kind of follow since discovering, because I came to his stuff quite late, really, and all his stuff, really interestingly, has a, you know, it's not a great look, but you can tell you're watching a Paul Tanter film. I don't know how he does it, but it's got quite a distinctive visual style. I don't know if it's because he's using the same people, or, you know, he's editing in the same way or whatever, but yeah, you can generally tell his films apart from most other British directors working in the same kind of budget range.
Yeah, but what I'm impressed, though, is that you can see growth in him. You know, he's definitely matured as a director, I think. You know, going from the two SAS ones up to this, and then on to 12, Once Upon a Time at Christmas, which I just really liked. You know, as soon as I realised what the gimmick was, I was smiling, basically. I really appreciate how he's actually developed as a director.
It'd be interesting to get your view on the TV work that he's focusing a lot on now, because he's got like two series that are on Prime presently. I think there's No Easy Days, which came out a couple of years ago, I think, which has a Pierce Brosnan's son, and which is basically a 24 kind of.
Yeah.
It's mixed up with a couple of other series, but it's like 24 combined with something else. And the other one is, I think, Age of the Living Dead. Zombie series, which I'm curious. I've only seen a couple of episodes of the former, and I haven't seen any of the latter yet, because trying to fit in TV series is a bit difficult for me. But it's again, it all sort of looks in his sort of same visual style. And what I wanted to mention, in terms of it. A bad thing that's very entertaining in this film.
Yeah.
Is the sword fights.
a little bit contrived, didn't it?
But did you notice that there's no blood?
Yeah.
So they're having a sword fight, and there's the sound effect of a slice, but you don't actually see any wounds in any way. And the, I think there's one bit where a guy, he's got like a little line of red on his cheek. He's got like a little nick on his cheek. But that's all you see. And then he's like finished off and everything. And you still don't see anything. but he gets his head decapitated or something. It's implied. But then he hands the sword to his guys to take away, and it's completely clean. It's like there's not been any sort of practical or even CGI effects to sort of enhance these sword fights. So there's one then, and then there's one at the end. James has the upper hand. Interestingly, James has completely the upper hand. Everyone's sort of risen up, and you know they've got the bad guy backed into a corner, and they just go, no, let's take care of this like men, kind of thing. You know, it's like, hand me a sword, let's go at it, mano a mano. But there's again an unexpected kind of payoff, because it's a bit like in Crackerjack. The takedown of the villain is not as you would expect. So I thought that was quite curious as well. But Tom Hopper delivers this line in whatever the language is. Can't say, like a Czech language, to the bad guy. He's like, his payoff line is, there's a reason it was called the Dark Ages. I don't love the line, but I thought it was quite interesting how he reveals that he knows the language really well and whatever. He's clearly a very experienced CIA kind of agent. It's very Segalian kind of, even though it's a diehard setup. There's lots of, you know, Steven Seagal kind of influences in it, which I enjoyed as a Seagal fan. I got quite a kick out of it. So yeah, it took me quite a while to actually catch up with this, and your prompting, but I'm really glad I finally did.
So this one is on Netflix. You can find this, on Netflix, basically, what I'm talking about. If you're that way inclined and you like what we're talking about, check it out. If you like what we're talking about, let us know. We're on Twitter and Facebook as the DTV Digest. We're quite easy to find, and we're quite friendly to talk to, so please do. Otherwise, tune in again next time. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.